For one thing, intellectual life was changing in important ways. Most importantly, in the city of Kiev, the former capital of Russia, and now, of course, it's in Ukraine, another country altogether, became in the 17th century an enormously important center for the whole nation of intellectual and cultural interchange with the West. An academy was set up that taught Latin, it taught Greek as well as Slavonic, rhetoric, philosophy, including Western ideas, and other disciplines. And this so-called Slavonic Latin Greek Academy had counterparts in many other cities in Russia as well, an attempt to cross the divides between Eastern and Western Christian cultures, between Russia and the West as well. But probably the most telling sign of Russia's growing connections to the West were the huge numbers of foreigners who came to live in Muscovite Russia. The Russian czars in the 17th century knew that they needed a modern economy, knew they needed a modern army to compete in the world. And to ensure this, they invited growing numbers of foreigners to bring their skills and to teach Russians. The army was the first to benefit. It was reorganized on Western lines with the help of Western military advisors, most in particular Scotsmen. And indeed, large numbers of foreign soldiers and officers, thousands of them, were employed in the Tsar's army. A modern army, of course, requires modern weapons. At first, Russia solved this problem by importing the latest rifles and artillery and munitions from Western Europe, but this proved expensive. So again, Russia solved the problem by importing foreign engineers, foreign craftsmen, to set up arms factories in Russia. Increasingly in the course of the 17th century, other foreigners were welcomed to Russia and granted various forms of economic concession to mine and smelt iron, to manufacture glass, to craft watches, to make textiles, to design and construct new buildings, to cure the sick, and of course, to teach Russians how to do all of these things. And many of these foreign settlers, sometimes originally might be thought of as mercenaries, in fact became permanent residents of Russia, settling forever, raising families, marrying with Slavs, increasingly becoming part of Russia. And their numbers were considerable, especially in Moscow, the capital, where according to a visitor in the 1670s, there were probably somewhere near 18,000 foreigners. So many were they, in fact, that, and this was the time of Alexei, Peter's father, who ruled 1645 to 76, that there were so many foreigners, a special neighborhood had to be created for them that was given the name of Nemetskaya Sloboda in Russian, literally the foreign settlement. And of course, the creation of the settlement had contradictory meanings. On the one hand, this was created to accommodate foreigners, to create an attractive community for them. On the other hand, it was created to isolate them from excessive everyday contact with Russians. Nevertheless, all of these changes were affecting Russians in many ways in their everyday lives. If, for example, you were visiting Russia in the, say, 1670s, and you were going to go out to dinner at the house of some nice nobleman, you might see a surprisingly Western appearance in the way they dress, the way they eat, and the like. For example, just to make it very concrete, if you visited a certain man named Vasily Lyutkin, no one particularly famous, just a regular nobleman near the end of the 17th century, you'd find a man fully in Western dress and, tellingly, without a beard, the beard being the sign of godliness and tradition in Russia. He was a man who might show you a painting hanging on his wall that he had painted for him, a totally Western tradition which he indulged in. For good measure, he asked the artist of this painting to write an inscription in Latin letters. Now, neither he nor the artist knew anything about Latin except the letters, so it's actually written in Russian, but using the Latin alphabet. He wanted to show how European he was, and the artist was. If he invited you to dine, judging by what we know of other elites in these years, you might be treated to some rather untraditional Western foods. He might serve you salad. He might give you asparagus. And the very words for these things, salat, sparja, were clearly imported from the West. He might offer you to smoke some tobacco, even though smoking tobacco was prohibited by the Russian church as a sin and considered quite un-Russian. And if it was Sunday and you joined him in one of the new churches being built in Moscow, you'd find yourself in a rather familiar, if you were from Western Europe, familiar-looking European-style Baroque interior. Clearly, then, at least for the Russian elite, things were changing. Even before Peter the Great's reforms, one sees an openness to definitions of what it means to be Russian. In particular, one sees a growing sense of Russia as being European, even one might say cosmopolitan.